Friends of mine raised their children very consciously not to ever see movies or hear stories where anything bad happened, so that they never ever were exposed to darkness. I was never sure if it was a good idea or not, since certainly there's darkness in the world. And then one day, their daughter and I were sitting talking, and she started to confide in me. She was about 6 or 7. She says, "You know, sometimes, Bruce, I have dreams, and I cut off my parents' head, and blood comes shooting out, and I take out their eyes," and she went on and on and on, and I was like, wow. She's never heard a fairy tale where that kind of thing happens. She's never seen a movie where darkness emerges. And it came up from in her. And I said, wow, that's really interesting. Wow, wow. It was very instructive to me. And I tell you this because from a very young age, I was aware of the darkness within myself. And it was always both terrifying and fascinating, but I was never immune to it. It always had its pull. I never understood it, nor do most of us understand it, but there it was. I remember looking at images of Christ on the cross and going, oh, what is that? And yet I was very compelled by it. I didn't get it, but I knew it pulled something up inside. I would hear stories about World War II, which was still very fresh because I was born in the middle of it. And Life magazine would publish these pictures of the Holocaust that were just discovered. And I would just stare at those piles of dead bodies. And I was very aware of the evil in the world and very aware of how I couldn't look away. When I was very young, 5 years old or less, my father and mother and I were driving, and there was a car accident not far ahead of us, and we got out, and there was a girl my age lying on the ground, covered in a wool blanket with blood moving through the blanket. And I was so horrified and so connected to that, that I thought about it for the rest of my life. It was my first real intimation of mortality. And from that day on, I could not wear a wool suit because she had a wool blanket over her that would get wet. One of the reasons spiritual work appealed to me so dramatically was that I needed it to help avert my eyes from the world, from the darkness in the world. I thought if I didn't go there, if I didn't think about it, if I didn't engage it, it wouldn't be there. You know, that Hitler and Stalin wouldn't exist if I didn't think about that part of the universe. And I was very compelled by this idea of embracing light, wanting the light to come in, to flood out the darkness, if you will, to really bring me to a place of so much illumination that darkness didn't exist. When I took my first and primary LSD trip, the one that totally shattered my worldview, the first 3 or 4 million years of the journey were through darkness. And it was a long trip. I've talked about it elsewhere, I won't go into it now, but it was a long process of dismantling Bruce. And it was very Hieronymus Bosch, if those of you who know his painting, The Garden of Earthly Delights. I was really being systematically dismantled, and every memory I had, every part of me was being pulled out of my system, and it was a world of unbearable pain and suffering and darkness. In the end of that very long process, there was no Bruce left. There was just a vast, what I will call emptiness, nothingness, if you will, that had no character to it at all, but it's often been described as peace. There was no longer any sense of otherness. There was nothing but what was. It had no form, no dimension, no character. It just was. And I was that, whatever that was, I was that. And it had no time in it, so it could have been infinite, it could have been, well, literally timeless. And then somehow in the middle of that absolute peaceful stillness, something happened. I felt impregnated and broke into 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. I kept breaking apart. And as I reassembled, as this thing kept breaking and expanding, it recreated Bruce. It recreated the room I was in. It recreated the universe. And suddenly, I was completely black, back in three-dimensional, time-related reality. I remember all I could do at that moment was laugh, and I laughed like a bear, is how I described it. I just laughed, big laugh. But I did ask very deeply, why am I back? Why am I back? And the reason I was told was to talk about the journey that I'd had. But I had to understand the journey, and so I tried very hard to dig into some comprehension of what took place, and my friend Barry Kaplan brought me a book called the Bhagavad Gita, which I started reading, the Hindu song of God, and I started reading it, and I knew the truth of it. And Buddhism suddenly became true to me. Mystical Judaism and Christianity became true to me. I understood all of it, and I needed to know, how do I put all this together? And I began this journey in my life that took me to India, took me to all sorts of teachers, remarkable teachers and not so remarkable teachers. It brought me to Rudy, and Rudy gave me a work, a practice, and that practice was very energetic, and that practice helped me to break down my fears, my tensions, my inhibitions, all of these things that were pulling at me inside, that the darkness that I knew still was there. And I was very afraid, particularly of the darkness of that LSD trip, the hellish part of it. And with Rudy's work, I kept breaking free of it and getting stronger and more capable. And I started opening my heart, and all of my chakras started to expand, and there was light pouring out of me and love. And I was told I could teach, and I began to teach this and spread light everywhere. And I started to feel, I am free of all of that stuff. And then a year ago, as most of you know, I had this, what's called an awakening, and Bruce itself, the Bruce construct, fell away. Just fell away. And if there was ever a sense of absolute freedom, that was the moment. Just freedom. And for about 9 months, that freedom was very rich and very full and very delicious, blissful, really blissful. And then slowly it started to erode, and it eroded into something which I've talked about in recent classes, which I have begun to call nothingness. So there was no blissful quality to the awakening, it was just qualityless. It was just kind of simple. But there was a part of me now facing nothingness that didn't like it. The part of me that liked the bliss was starting to look at the nothingness as going, wait a minute, you promised me bliss. I wanted something. I didn't want nothing. I wanted something. And I kept reaching for something and it wasn't there, and I kept experiencing absence rather than something. And then, out of nowhere, this horrific LSD experience feeling started to return. And it was no longer a Bruce experience, it was what I call an elemental experience. It was the forces, or the force itself, of darkness. You can call it evil, you can call it demonic, you can call it whatever you want, started to rise up in the middle of the night and wake me up and grab me and say, it was the ultimate truth. It was the ultimate truth, and that all of my seeking for light and joy and bliss and beauty was just my own fantasy. That the only truth was darkness and death. And I could not argue it away. I could not argue my way out of that truth, as much as I tried. And it was and remains bigger than anything you can imagine. More powerful, more insistent, more real. My approach to it, this has happened to me before, I'm not delineating the whole long journey, but this has happened before, but it had not happened post-awakening. So now I had to really deal with this in some new way. And so what I did when it arrived, and I saw it staring at me and really ripping at the core of some kind of being, and it wasn't even Bruce being, it was just being, is I started to sing to it. And I've described this in other talks, so you may have heard it, but I started singing, "Hello darkness, my old friend, I'm here to talk to you again," the Simon and Garfunkel song. And it just helped me a lot, because what it did was two things. It stood up to the darkness, not in a confrontational way, but in a respectful way. One, I acknowledged it, and two, I respected it. And it has not from that moment gone away. It is now living with me in the daylight as much as at night. I'm in the middle of a journey, so I can't talk about this in any kind of conclusive way. But last weekend, I had to go talk to a conference of awakened people, which I've done now 3 years in a row, and it was at one of those conferences where the year ago that the awakening occurred. And it occurred while I was listening to a guy, really a wonderful guy named Paul Hederman, who has a website called Zen Bitch Slap, and those of you who've heard my stories know about him and know about that. And in the middle of my darkness about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and this was really hitting me in a big way, I get a call from Paul out of the blue. He doesn't usually pick up the phone and call people, to say he'd be traveling through this area and would love to see me. And it was like a bolt of light shooting into the darkness. And unfortunately, I was landing in JFK as he was passing by this house. But he was on his way to Philadelphia, and I ended up going to Philadelphia to hear him talk and met with him, and it was wonderful. And I started seeing light flooding into the darkness, and then I had to go to this conference the week later where he had canceled, and he was going to be there to speak a second time. But now I was the man who was coming to talk about his awakening to a group of people who only wanted to hear the joys and the perfection of what it means to be an awakened being. And all I could talk about was how I'd lost it, how I'd had an awakening and now I wasn't awake. I was flooded with a dark force. Excuse me. And so I didn't know quite what to do. And I offered not to talk, but I was told to talk. So I sat down and Yelena was there sitting right in front of me, which was wonderful. And I told everybody what I just told you. And it didn't go down well for a lot of people, because I must say most people who seek the spiritual path do so because they don't want the darkness to be there. So to have somebody sit in the middle of that room and talk about hell forces and huge dark contents of being didn't appeal to everybody. But it turned out in the end to have great impact. A number of things have occurred. One of them is the night that I had this huge episode, I felt its vibration in a very big way. I didn't know how big it was, but 2 days later I gave class in Los Angeles and somebody came to that class, who's a very important person in my life, and he said, "I need to talk to you." And we talked after class. He says, "2 nights ago I had this huge experience." And he described exactly the experience of darkness that I went through. When I got to Philadelphia, I was told I should have dinner with this woman who's sponsoring this talk that Paul Hederman, the Zen bitch slap guy, was speaking at. And we had dinner, and she said, "I have to tell you something. About so many nights ago, I had this horrifying experience, and I almost had to go to the hospital. I was so terrified. And it was my same exact experience. And I will tell you now that a fair number of people have come up to me to share the same thing." Now, I don't know what this means. I have no idea. But I will put it this way. The universe is yin and yang. It's made of light and darkness. And if you think you can become a whole person by entering the light, you may be mistaken. I am beginning to sense how powerfully one has to acknowledge and embrace the darkness. And it is not polite, it is not pretty, it is not fun. It's pretty much as awful as one would imagine. On the other hand, if you can respect it and acknowledge it and stand up, you can learn to, if you will, own it and embrace it. And it seems to me, and I'm talking out of school here because I don't know everyone else's path, but my own journey, which for some reason I'm documenting here, has involved allowing the darkness in. Not allowing it. Allowing it makes me sound like I'm in charge. It's entering. And it's entering in the way that Shiva enters life. The darkness, in the Hindu sense, the Shiva energy, and Rudrananda, which is the wild side of it, and the name Rudi, Rudrananda, is a representation of the wild side of Shiva, is that it's a destroyer. And in the most polite sense, it destroys ignorance. That's the part I like. It destroys ignorance, ego, all of that stuff. And the uglier side of it, it creates horror, torture, war, holocausts, suicides, etc. It's not a passive force. It's not gentle, it's not nice, it doesn't love us. Well, I won't say that. It's doing its work. It's doing its work. And it's working on me now very strongly. And I say that not in a negative way, but it is pushing me out of any comfort zone that I have ever inhabited. And none of it's fun, but it's very real. It simply won't let me crawl back behind what I call spiritual mask. We all have spiritual masks. More people have them than not. The spiritual mask is, I am a sweet and perfect being. I am full of light. I am goodness itself. I am free and transcendent of everything. I mean, which may be true. May be true. But my experience is that unless that totality is there, unless the darkness is one with the light, and unless one totally accepts all, the transcendent peace that one looks for will not be real. After my experience a few weeks ago, one of the images that came up very powerfully was the image of Buddha under the Bo tree, sitting there with the forces of darkness assailing him. And he was like, simply there. Those forces of darkness that were assailing Buddha, I believe, were not gentle, were not conceptual, were not Walt Disney or James Cameron special effects. They were the true forces of darkness. They were elemental forces. And Buddha's ability to accept and be in the presence of those forces, to exist in a state of absolute enlightened awareness, was the journey that we're all on. And so I'm just describing as best I can my horror of that space and my work now to walk through it with courage. Rudy had a great line for it. He said, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, even though I will be shitting in my pants every step of the way." And that's really, in a way, where I find myself, not so much right now, because things are starting to change in a rather remarkable way. But it is courage. It is just courage. Every step is courage. And if we're really on this journey of spiritual awakening, truly, truly, courage is necessary. Be yourself. And I had a thought to sit in this class today and have it be a confessional and to tell you all of my dark shit. I was talking to Blanche about it, and she says, "Well, do you want to hear everybody else's dark shit?" And I said, honestly, I do not want to hear it. I can leave it as at the conceptual, imagined level. And I think you probably would rather that with me as well. So I'm not going to sit here and do that, even though it would be good for my psyche to do it. If anybody in this room wants to know all my dark shit, we can sit privately and I will let it all out. And you can then either decide to stay with me as a teacher or not. And if you leave, I totally get it. But I will tell you, I'm as full of it as you are, and we are all part of that journey. We're all full of stuff. And every one of us has dreams of cutting our parents' head off and gouging their eyes out. Even if you don't admit it to yourself or to anybody else, we are all light and dark. That's what we are. There's no way around it, as far as I can tell. I will tell you that privately, again, it was told to me by one of these people who described that they had the same experience that I had on the night that I had it, that they're very good friends with one of these world leader teachers who has had the exact same experience, the exact same experience. And that people who had the awakening, who were speaking at this conference the other night, came up to me privately afterward and said, "I know what you're talking about. I have been there." So I know I'm not alone on this trip, and I know what I'm describing to you and anyone who's listening to this talk, that this is more universal than one might like to think about. But I am telling you that if you want to live a spiritual life, you're not going to get out of this without confronting your own dark stuff. And Trust me, your dark stuff has a capacity to terrorize you like nothing else, whatever it may be. Your fear of heights, your fear of burning up in fire, drowning, I don't care what it is. When that thing presents itself to you elementally, even if not egotistically or egoistically, you will have a really strong reaction. If this house were on fire right now, we would all be running for the door. And if the door was locked, we would all discover what I'm talking about. Another way to discover what I'm talking about, hold your breath for 4 minutes. Somewhere in the 1 minute mark, you're going to get a clue to what this feels like. It's biological. It's there. It's there for a reason. And you got to pass through it at some point. And the spiritual journey, even if it liberates you from everything, it will still be there. And I refer a lot to Christ on the cross, who had to be as awakened a guy on the planet as has been around. And he was abandoned by his own connection. Why have you forsaken me? And then he was found again. Unto you I commend my spirit. It's the journey, guys. This is what we're on. Those of us who want to be on it, and those of you who don't want to be on it, you're going to be thrust through it at the last minute. One way or another, we're all going through it. The advantage of a spiritual life, of a journey of unfolding, is that there's a process that you can own, that you can acknowledge, that you can experience, that you can know, and it's very, very, very valuable. To come to the end of your life and suddenly face what we're talking about here, to suddenly have that second or 10 seconds or whatever it is to figure this all out, I would not want to be there. I was there on my LSD trip. I was totally unprepared, and they kicked me through hell to teach me this lesson. And then they put me back here to learn it in a gentler way. That's what we're all doing here. You guys come to this class, in many ways, I suspect, out of your fear more than your pursuit of light. You come here because you need something this has to offer. What it has to offer is, if you will, a preparation or a practice for a reality. But that reality is, for most of us, we of the older generation, it's coming at us quickly. We have less and less time to embrace all this. And the best way to embrace it, I'm discovering, is to just be real. Moment to moment to moment, be real. And what you will discover, if you try that, is how unreal much of your day-to-day life is. How many lies you tell to yourself, how many lies you tell to everybody around you. And time for that is over. Stop lying. Stop hiding. Don't hide behind your spiritual mask or any other mask. Tear it all down and live your life. Let the shit hit the fan. Be you. Be you, whatever you are, in all aspects and all dimensions of yourself. Because you are the totality. You are the whole thing. And in the end, you need to love all of it. If you understand this idea, love yourself, love it all. Don't just love part of you. Love the whole of you. Because that's what we're here to learn. And that's the real awakening. George.
Is fear really a tool or motivator for us to break ourselves down and learn?
Sure. No, fear is...
I think we all live in a world on reality in our society because we're escaping everything all the time through media, through whatever.
Right. Well, you know, a capitalist world motivates us through fear, primarily. Fear and desire, the two big forces that keep us going and keep this whole thing going. And not just capitalist world, but I mean every world, but capapitalism has learned how to market it.
So the price of our egos.
Well, it doesn't really, it doesn't, you know, you have to break your ego down. It makes you insecure, but that insecurity is more egoism. You know, insecurity is a really great...
Well, I remember that there's something I learned from my son when you know, he'd been studying Buddhism and all this stuff and meditating. He got his thumbs stuck in the car door and all of a sudden all he can think about is pain and all of this reality.
No, pain is a great teacher. It's a, you know, it's a great teacher. And, you know, I mean, so many people try to talk about this world is an illusion. Well, I say, well, take a chainsaw and cut off your hand and tell me how illusory this is, or stick your thumb in a door. It's an illusion, maybe, but boy, does it work. It's a really compelling one. And it has its purpose, it has its value. Ultimately, I do believe and have experienced enough of transcendence and awakened consciousness to know that there is a path to that. But the path to that does not lead away from anything, it leads toward what is.
Well, we're all going to experience some pain, some you, yeah,
absolutely,
fear, some
you, absolutely, absolutely. You're going to get the whole thing.
And it's all part of the same thing.
It's all necessary in its own design, and moving toward it with courage, shitting in your pants if necessary, but moving forward, not blinded, but just okay. Kind of bring it on in a way. Let it happen, and you will find a kind of inner strength, awareness, clarity, beauty, joy that is extraordinary as a result of not running and not deluding yourself from what is. The greatest suffering is because we don't know the truth. Truth will liberate. And finding that truth in whatever way you can, and there's so many different ways. There's a woman at this conference who was very much what they call a yani yogi, someone who makes lists and dissects and analyzes and does all this, but who truly came to an awakening through that process. There are those of us who just are, you know, bhakti yogis. We come through our heart. That's our approach. There's so many different ways of working. Kundalini, wake you up through this incredible kind of energy moving through the system, you know, open all the chakras. There's so many ways. Find your way and go there. Just go there. But trying to do it one morning a week won't do it. It gets really serious. I describe it as we've had years of spiritual practice. Time for practice is done. You're done practicing. This is it. You've got so many years left, weeks left, months left, or seconds left. Who knows? This is the time to be doing it. If you're not doing it, you're going to know it.
Steve Jobs.
Well, Steve was more aware. Steve knew what was coming and was ready. Stephen Jobs also was a product of LSD, which is very interesting. And, you know, he knew this journey. He knew it just like we do. And, you know, this guy, you know, he gave a lecture that my son asked me to listen to. And it was at a commencement address, I think it's Stanford. Anybody who goes online can listen to it. It's quite beautiful. It's the same talk, you know. Get out there. Do this thing. Be authentic. Be real. Listen to your voice. And see where it takes you. And stay true.
Stay away from the dogma.
If you can, yeah.
From this place, can you speak more about courage? That means to you now.
Courage is a momentary, moment-to-moment thing now. It's really unbelievable. It's just moment-to-moment. There are moments, I don't know what the next moment will bring. The velocity of change that I'm experiencing is so dramatic that I don't know if the next moment will be elated or at the pit of existence, you know? I just don't know, and I keep having to take the next step, and the next one, and the next one. And I do it now in a way as a conscious act, and a kind of, thy will be done, thy will. And that thy will includes the absolute light and dark together, thy will. And I don't know which force will be particularly working, but I just keep working, and I just go forward, and it's relatively beautiful. It has moments that don't feel beautiful, but even that, when you embrace it, becomes exquisite. Poignant is a word somebody used at this conference. Poignant. Everything becomes poignant. It's very powerful. And I have to say, life feels more real to me now than it ever has. Ever. Real on so many levels. And, you know, I'm just trying to live it. It doesn't make you special on any level whatsoever. It just makes you you. Ultimately, you just become you. Whatever that is, whatever construct that may have. And like I'm saying, your goodness and your not goodness, your love and your awful dark side all come together in this totality of you. And you have to, you don't have to, but to do this from the perspective that I'm experiencing, you have to be the whole thing and live it honestly. Whatever that is. And watch what the dynamics are, because they're powerful. They're working on you. You know, and they're really energetic. So it's either turn away and not do, you know, I mean, you can sit down and meditate and actually be in a state of total avoidance of everything I'm talking about. It's really, meditation for many people is not that, not that. When in fact it has to be this too. Even that, even that.
So you spoke last year about moving toward this, that awakening to happen at that level. So how would you reframe that now?
I'm describing it now as the awakening of a year ago as a Satori, which is it's an awakening, but it's Adya Shanti would call it a non-abiding awakening. Although what's happening right now, although I would call it the non-abiding awakening, it feels strangely more awake than the awakening. That's all I can say. It's really, it's like, it's something else. It's very, it's just real. It's all day long, all night long, real. Where it leads to, I have no idea, nor do I think it matters. I take another step. There's no reason for the ground to be there when you take another step. I'm doing it as an act of faith. So are we all, but we don't know that. You know, you really believe when you sit down there's really going to be a chair there. You know, it's not a given, but that's usually how it works. When you're not sure that it's going to be there, you'll sit down as an act of faith. And it will be a very conscious awareness. And you'll feel very grateful when it supports you. So it's the same thing, but it's different.
Is this confidence, or like generally speaking, have you ever talked to people who had this awakening, like for example 10, 15 years ago? Like, you experience what you just described as like after 1 year. Like after 10, 15 years, are they still at the same stage? Or they move to something else.
Right. I mean, the question is, do these people who have awakened go through this process? It seems everyone is different. Everyone seems to be different. And
not going through this process to some different stage.
No, I've met people now who have had awakenings that were instantaneous and absolute. So they tell me, and I believe them, you know. Or there are people like Eckhart Tolle who had an awakening and spent 2 years trying to process what that was. He just sat on a park bench, he said, trying to understand it. I had the LSD trip and then spent 40 years trying to understand or process that, and now it's coming to this moment. It's really important to understand that what I'm describing is very much my journey. But if it relates to you, then use it. If it doesn't relate to you, then don't use it. It's not the truth, it's my truth, or a truth. But I'm trying to express it as honestly as I can for those who need to hear this particular configuration. There will be people who have awakenings that will be absolute and finished. If that absoluteness occurs here, I'll definitely express that. I'll talk about it. But I think the idea that anybody else's path will define your path is a big mistake, because nobody's got your configuration. Nobody's going to live it like you do. But the one thing I've discovered from all the people now that I've met, and I've met a fair number of people who are awakened in many ways, they are all so deeply authentic. They're so deeply real, so honest about their truth. And it's so moving to be around these people. And when I am around them, my own field of awareness expands. So when I go to this conference in North Carolina and I sit with these people, I don't come back the same person at all, just because things shift in very major ways. The one that happened a year ago was profound. What's happening this year is different, but it's happening. And I don't know what it is. And I felt really guilty about going there to talk about this part of my life. But I'm getting so many emails now from so many people saying this was the centerpiece of their experience. So it wasn't wrong for me to share this. It was necessary. And so I continue to do it because it's what's happening. And I will continue to do it because it's what's happening. And, you know, like I say, if there's nobody sitting in this room after a while, maybe I'll talk to the camera, I don't know. But mostly, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter. I've talked about not teaching a fair number of times, and some people have applauded that, and I think will not come back to the class. But I can't seem to stop at this point. It seems to keeps coming out. And I don't know why it keeps coming out, you know?
It's like a diary.
Like a diary. It's like a diary. But it's an unusual diary. And Tim, who came here yesterday from Naperville outside of Chicago, said to me, there aren't a lot of records of people documenting this journey exactly. And this may in fact be that kind of a document. I don't know where it's going to end up. It may be a document that leads to nowhere. Then, you know, so much for that. But if it does lead to anything that is meaningful to people, that will be wonderful. And the only reason I started doing this is because Greg said, record these. I never saw a reason to record them. I always liked the idea of sandcastles. You know, you build a castle and the wave comes in and washes it out, and it has its momentary life and that's it. It seemed perfectly fine for me to live with that. But now, for some reason, it's being documented, and it may just be for somebody to see the journey.
It's all kind of investigation lately.
Or I'll... being part of an explorer's club.
Oh, yeah.
You've gotten to somewhere. And,
it's really true, but you're all getting somewhere too.
Yeah.
You know,
we're all exploring our own inner space.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing that's so amazing for me, George, is, and I've said this 1,000 times, is that each of you drives so far every weekend to come and hear this journey, but more importantly, to sit in the space of it, because that space is the true space. It's the space of being, which is available to us at any point in time, anywhere we are, but rarely accessed. And somehow we have to make a journey to get to a place where we can sit truly still and be ourselves.
Because we're consciously working.
Yeah.
We're very often in our own minds.
No, most people all day long don't remember. Rudy said he used to go like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he would go, oh, I'm still here, I'm here. And a lot of people never do that at all. They never go, I'm here. They don't know they're here. They're just doing, and they don't get it at all, you know.
Rudy was very instinctively clever on how to get himself back.
Absolutely, you know, Rudy was brilliant.
He was just walking down to a used bread store or whatever to do to stimulate his.
Rudy lived it every second, you know. And I asked Arkady a few weeks ago. I said, "Why do you drive down from Boston every weekend for this? God, that's a, you know, why would anybody in their right mind do it?" And he said to me, "Instinct."
Yeah,
instinct. It's a great line. And I really understood that. And that's why I would go to Rudy's. I went to Rudy's, you know, every day of the week. Every day there was a class.
Down from Katona, New York.
I know. It's, you know, you do what you do because there's something happening here. And nobody's in this room because they just thought, well, hell, let's go to a class. There's something going on. And that thing that's going on is yourself pushing you into what will be, what I think will be, a profound awakening of self.
Can anybody's awakening really be absolute and complete? Because as you're living, as this awakened person, change must be happening. It's not complete.
It's a good question. It's a really good question. Rudy would have said no. He said you can't be fully awakened or enlightened until you die. Mm-hmm. There's still this, what I call the elemental self there. Mm-hmm. But I'm not the person to answer this question. The people I do talk to who have had this complete awakening will talk about the residual elements that are still at play. There's still a life and a body and all these things going on, but they are no longer operating as ego-driven entities. And it's really fascinating. My own experience now, which is really very new, is past has almost completely faded away. And not that I can't access it, but I don't live in the past
at
all.
What about the future?
And future is of no interest. I mean, the fact that I have to plan an event for a week away, or that I have this, like, this musical opening next year, it's crazy making. I don't want to deal with it. The next second is so totally, like, infinite light years away, that the idea of anything else is like, oh my God. And so I have started forgetting meetings. I've become like an Alzheimer ridden person. Past is no longer interesting. Future has no excitement for me.
Maybe it's, Alzheimer's is the one.
Well, it may be, and maybe that's what's going on. And this will be a report, ultimately, a book on Alzheimer's. You know, how Bruce lost his mind. But what it feels like, honestly, is that the moment is so rich in what it delivers, that to be preoccupied with anything else seems to be absurd.
So the moment drives you, so there is change.
No, the moment is, the only thing that drives me in the moment is accepting it, is being it. That's all it is. It's not to turn it into something else. In fact, my whole goal now is not to turn it into something else.
It's
truly to be it as it is. Be what is. And boy, does that take work. Be what is. If that thumb has just been hit by a hammer, be it. Of course, it's hard not to.
It's an unlearning.
It's a what?
An unlearning.
An unlearning. That's a really good word. It's an unlearning. You unlearn it all, and you just are. And when you just are, you are. And I'm telling you, what you are is truth itself. And we are all that, even when we don't know it. We're all that even when we're lying to ourselves. It's all part of the whole process, and it is a remarkable process. Remarkable. And in the end, it's no longer process, as far as I can tell. It just is. Okay?
Just real quick, it always just is, though.
Yes, of course. Well, that's what the realization
is.
Realization, the great word for spiritual awakening, realizes you go, oh, it's always that. Finished. But harder than it thinks, than one thinks. I mean, it isn't, but it is. You know, it's really easy, but it's not easy. Leave it at that.